This is Cultured Hollywood for smart people for Wednesday, December 12th, 2018. I'm Nico. I'm your host, back at it again, talking movies, television, music, and so much more in a way that smart people can enjoy them. We're nearing the end of 2018, about to ring in 2019. My God, only like two more episodes between now and the end of the year. Can you believe it, cultured heads? It's unbelievable. 2018, in like a lion, out like a lamb, as they say. You didn't even know it was here, and it's already gone. Look, people, again, there's only going to be like two more episodes between now and the end of the year. Next week, we'll do a sort of, I don't know, Christmas spectacular on this podcast. I don't know exactly what I'll talk about, but I will try to be as festive and holly and jolly as I possibly can. I'll do my best Kris Kringle impression on next week's Cultured. Then we'll have a break for the holiday. And then before you know it, it's going to be New Year's Eve in a few weeks, and that's when we'll do the Year in Review edition of this podcast. And I will have all of the top 10 lists and retrospectives that your heart desires. All right? Because there's certainly not enough of those on the internet. One more top 10 movie list for you to consume. You glutton. You pop culture glutton. You swine. Time to go on a diet. Time to slim down. All this Hollywood coverage, it's making you sick. I'm excited to talk about Hollywood today. I hope you are as well. I got to be honest with you. Look, man, we're starting this podcast in the same way we ended the last one. And that doesn't make me very happy. Here's the deal. I do not want to talk about Kevin Hart for 2 weeks in a row. All right, America? You're really making me upset. Nico's getting upset. When I started this podcast, my intention was not for this to be the premier Kevin Hart outlet. What my heart desires is less Kevin Hart. My heart's just not in it, man. My heart is not in on Hart. But of course, the internet does what the internet does this week. And now I am forced to talk about Kevin Hart 2 weeks in a row. And not only that, I'm going to be put in the rare position, and you will never see this again. This is like a Bigfoot sighting. I am going to be put in the rare position of defending Kevin Hart on a podcast. And I really don't want to do that. I'm really not in the mood on a Wednesday afternoon to defend Kevin Hart in front of a microphone. I fucking can't stand the guy. The guy is a joke, and not in the good way. Not in the way that stand-up comics want to be jokes. He's a clown. He's a glorified lounge singer. Like, he is to stand-up comedy what a Kiss cover band is to rock and roll. The dude doesn't perform his own material. He has a staff of writers. And by the way, that staff of writers isn't particularly good at what they do. I find his stand-up to be lazy. I find his act to be tiresome. I find his acting work in most motion picture comedies to be pretty abhorrent. The guy is an abomination. I didn't like the choice in the first place. I was on the podcast last week complaining about the choice. I said, look, Academy, you have put yourselves in the position where hosting the Oscars is a no-win scenario. It is lose-lose. No one comes out of the Academy Awards unscathed. So the most prolific and the most insightful and the most hot and hip comedy acts in the world don't want to host the Oscars. It's a war zone. It's a battleground. It's a minefield. But I got to tell you, folks, this whole charade of digging through a famous person's social media history in the hopes of torpedoing some of their biggest career achievements is among the most despicable acts of mob mentality I have ever seen in 23 years on this planet. This is really getting old. This is really getting despicable. This is like beyond politics. I mean, I understand these actions in the context of a political race. Like, I get it. If you are a politician, you have signed up for a bloodbath. You have signed up for a fight in the mud. So when a political campaign does opposition research on someone and digs up dirt on Bill Clinton or Barack Obama or Donald Trump, I have no sympathy. There is no moral ground to stand on. You have signed up for a vicious game. And that game often involves your personal lives. And it often involves dragging your reputation through the mud. I accept that as an unfortunate reality of American politics. What I do not accept is that we have taken this despicable, dishonest, political game into the private sector. I do not accept that this is a legitimate way of hiring or firing an individual in Hollywood, or in any industry for that matter. The same thing happened last week with Kyler Murray, the quarterback of the Oklahoma Sooners, who just won the Heisman Trophy by a very narrow margin. Last Saturday, Kyler Murray wins the Heisman. It is the crowning achievement of this young man's life. It will go down as one of the most important moments of his career. And what do the Twitter trolls decide to do at that very moment? Dig up tweets from Kyler Murray's 15-year-old Twitter account. Homophobic, sexist, racist remarks from when he was in high school. This tomfoolery on the part of Twitter trolls is not intended to shine light on a meaningful issue. It's not to give voice to the voiceless, to stand up for the powerless. It's not even intended to be serious investigative journalism. This is a political hit job, and the victim is not a politician. It's a kid who said stupid things in high school. And because he grew up a millennial, those stupid things have been plastered on the internet for all to see. You and I said stupid things in high school. We were kids. We didn't know any better. We didn't know this could come to bite us. We didn't know that this could sink our careers. We didn't know this would become a 24 to 48 hour news story. This is political assassination. This is tarring and feathering. This is mob justice. Justice is not the word here, because no actual justice is being served. This is purely for the entertainment and catharsis of a bunch of sick, twisted people on social media. They'll never do anything meaningful with their lives. They'll never achieve anything of merit. So they spend their precious days trolling famous people and trolling the powerful in an effort to make them powerless. In an effort to bring shame on those who are far more dedicated, far more talented, far more meaningful than them. They're jealous. They're empty. They're savages. They're disgusting. That's what these people do. They go through and meticulously scroll through every single famous person's social media history. And then once they find something, once they find a trigger word, they sit back and wait. Because Lord knows, these idiots could have brought up the Kevin Hart tweets several years ago. As a matter of fact, they did bring them up several years ago. These tweets have been sitting on Kevin Hart's page since 2009. They could have said something then. They could have brought these tweets to the public's attention. They could have demanded an apology once they found them, but instead, no, they waited. They waited for the day when Kevin Hart had something that he really wanted. When he achieved something in his career that would define the next 10 years of his life. In this case, it's hosting the Oscars. And on that very special day, these sad, pathetic internet trolls opened up their filing cabinet, rummaged through to find these old tweets, and set out to destroy everything that Kevin Hart had ever worked for. And they got what they wanted. Kevin Hart is no longer the host of the Oscars because he tweeted a couple bad words 10 fucking years ago. Okay. I see. This is investigative journalism. That's what this looks like now. Like, do these people honestly think they're making a difference? Do they think they're breaking new ground? Do you think they're bringing bad people to justice? Doing no harm? Speaking up for the maligned? No, man. This ain't Harvey Weinstein. This ain't Kevin Spacey. You're not Ronan Farrow. You don't work for the New York Times. You're not exposing a culture of sexual abuse in Hollywood. In fact, you're not exposing anything that couldn't be found by a 12-year-old with a Twitter feed. You're a troll. You're a hack. You want to destroy people's careers. And unlike political hacks, you have no agenda. You have no cause to lobby for. You have no moral imperative to stand on. You just enjoy watching the world burn. And you enjoy watching people more successful than you get knocked down to your level. A couple of gay slurs on a Twitter feed? Seriously, people? That's the line? Tweets from 2009, 2010, 2011, homophobic in nature, insensitive jokes made by a young, bad comedian. That's where our outrage lies? Do you honestly believe that Kevin Hart has the same opinion of gay people as he did in 2009, before he was a major Hollywood star, before he worked in an industry with an insanely high gay population? Really? You think he hasn't evolved? Because surely that means your opinion hasn't changed either, right? I mean, you've always been down with the LGBT community. Even in 2009, before gay marriage was legal nationwide. I'm sure no bigoted words ever came out of your mouth. Never made a gay joke on the playground. Never called one of your friends the F word. I'm sure you were always above the board. A friend of the gays, they must have called you. Before you even knew what transgender meant. Yep. You were down. You were accepting. You were an ally. Same opinion then as you do now. Because that's how human beings work, apparently. You have an opinion when you're a kid, and then when you get older, you just keep that same opinion. But Nico, why didn't he apologize? If he just apologized, everything would have went back to normal. Well, first of all, he did apologize. He just didn't apologize on your terms. He apologized after stepping down from the Oscars. Because when the Academy gave him an ultimatum, he recognized the same thing that I recognized. This is a political hit job. This is an attempt to tarnish my reputation. This is not a legitimate controversy. So fuck this, I'm out. Secondly, he's already addressed these issues several years ago. His comments are well documented. He has apologized in the past and explained that his opinion has evolved. And finally, you morons, when are you going to realize that apologizing is not the answer here? When are you going to realize that apologizing only feeds the belly of the beast? This only makes the trolls stronger. It only legitimizes their campaigns. You must understand, these tweets exist for literally every single comic in the world. And Nick Cannon pointed that out on Twitter this week. He retweeted an old Amy Schumer joke and an old Sarah Silverman joke and other female comedians who have used the F word before. and expose the double standard. You can dig this shit up on just about anyone, especially if you're a stand-up comic and you've spent thousands of hours in comedy clubs. You've tried out a host of different material, thousands upon thousands of jokes, many of them insensitive. Many of them you've scrapped due to better judgment. This shit is out there. The point is, these trolls didn't dig up Kevin Hart's tweets because they had a legitimate grievance with Kevin Hart, because they believed this homophobe needed to be stopped. They timed it perfectly with his most significant career achievement. And the only reason that this didn't happen to Amy Schumer is because Amy Schumer was not chosen to host the Oscars. This is a farce. And the only way to combat this farce is to not apologize for it, but to call it what it is, a political hit job. It's wrong. It's disgusting. It's immoral. It is mob mentality at its worst. This is the new norm now. And it's gross. And if you believe that Kevin Hart should have apologized and should have played the trolls' game, catered to their demands, went down on two knees and begged for their forgiveness, folks, you got another thing coming. Because once you achieve the pinnacle of your career, once you have everything you ever wanted, once all of your hard work and tenacity pays off, they're going to do the exact same thing to you. Enough digging up people's tweets. Ugh, I can't stand it, man. And by the way, if you have a Twitter account like I do, and I will probably do this within the next few months, I suggest very strongly that you purge that thing, that you just wipe all of your old tweets, because who knows what the hell they're going to dig up on you. Like, you have no idea what kind of shit will disqualify you from a job, will tarnish your reputation, will have you branded a sexist or a racist or a homophobe. Shit from 10 years ago when you were in high school? Folks, come on. And of course, the irony is I can't stand Kevin Hart, and it's probably for the best that he's not hosting the Oscars. But man, what a terrible way to go down. This is Cultured. We're going to talk a lot more about award shows, some interesting casting news. A full docket is on the way coming up over the next 45 minutes or so. It's Cultured. We'll be right back. Okay, so here's the deal. We are jam-packed with award show content this week. Screen Actors Guild nominations just came out today. Grammy nominations came out last week. Golden Globe nominations came out last week. Critics' Choice Award nominations came out last week. We are in the thick of award season. There is plenty of prognosticating to do. I will analyze each of these shows in explicit detail later on in the program. You will get my snubs and surprises. You will get my big picture thoughts, my micro and macro thoughts, where I think the Oscars are going to go this year, the state of the race, the state of film in 2018, that's coming towards the end of the show for all of you pop culture nerds out there, for those that enjoy my award show talk. If you have no interest and don't know the difference between an Emmy and a Grammy and a Tony, that's fine. Sit this one out. It's all good, man. Right now, I'll talk about some Star Wars shit, and I'll talk about Avengers, and then you and I can part ways. So let's get this out of the way, and then we'll do a deep dive on the award show stuff. First of all, let's talk about this Avengers trailer. It's one of the, what do they call it now? It's the most viewed trailer within the first 55 minutes of its premiere. It is tracking to be more popular than the FIFA World Cup. It's like these numbers don't even make sense anymore. Every week, something breaks a trailer record. Of course it's going to break it. This was like the biggest movie ever last year. Everyone talked about part one of the Avengers Infinity War saga. And now it's ending with a film called Avengers Endgame. Now, here's the deal. I don't give a flying fuck about this movie. Let me make that very, very, very clear. I saw Infinity War on opening weekend with the rest of y'all, but I didn't see nearly as much as you saw in that flick. Like, you guys were losing your minds at that ending. To me, it's just like, oh, okay. So they killed off half the cast, but we know that Tom Holland and Benedict Cumberbatch are signed up for like 5 more movies. So how about we run back this clock and wrap this thing up, shall we? Let's get that time stone. Let's get that reality bending stone. Let's put it in the gauntlet. Let's send Thanos back to the underworld or wherever the hell he's from. And let's get this show on the road. Give me some Spider-Man 2 action, please. Like, I really don't care about that ending. I don't care about that cliffhanger. And I'm pretty sure I know how they're going to resolve this damn thing. And by the way, I also don't give a flying fuck that Chris Evans is now done as Captain America. Whatever, man. Like, he's always been the least interesting performance in this whole saga. Like, I'm pretty sure Captain America is like my 12th favorite Avenger. So he's in this movie and he doesn't have a beard. So congrats to Chris Evans on finding a razor for the apocalypse. Here's my big picture thought, though. You know who is definitely not my 12th favorite Avenger? He's more like my first or second favorite Avenger. Fucking Hawkeye, man. Guess what? Guess what? Avengers Endgame. Hawkeye back, baby. Renner! What a welcome face. Like an old friend. Coming home for the holidays. Haven't seen you in a while. Here's gruff, agitated, emo Jeremy Renner with a bunch of bow and arrows. Dude, how dope is Hawkeye? Can I just take a second? I just want to take a second to point out that Hawkeye has been sold so short in these Avengers films. Like, the Hulk got 2 movies, and I like the Hulk as much as the next guy. But he had the Incredible Hulk, and then he showed up in Thor Ragnarok, and he was fun. And Black Widow, as hot as ScarJo is in that outfit, she was in the Captain America movies. And, you know, we got a fair dose of each of these heroes. For some goddamn reason, Jeremy Renner is just relegated to the bench on each of these movies. He comes in, gives you about 10 good minutes, and then leaves. And they're always my 10 favorite minutes. Dude, Avengers Age of Ultron is a horrendous film by any standard, but that sequence when they go to Jeremy Renner's farm in the middle of Idaho or something, and they meet his family, his wife played by Linda Cardellini, and they're like, Renner, you have to come back. And he's like, who are the Avengers again? I have a beard now. I cut wood in the forest. Leave me alone. Let me raise my goats in peace. Y'all, that is the best part of Avengers Age of Ultron. Thank God. It is the one thing Infinity War was lacking. Like, it was a big spectacle. All of your favorite heroes were in the same room, bantering like clever white guys do. And apparently like superheroes do. Every superhero is the most charming guy at the bar. So Hemsworth is bantering with Chris Pratt. And Spider-Man is bantering with Doctor Strange. And it's cool. And it's like the doctors are meeting the other doctors and the wizards are meeting the other wizards. And Spider-Man's got that cool Iron Man suit on. It was all well and good. But I gotta tell you, I was missing Hawkeye. There was a massive Jeremy Renner-shaped hole in the middle of my heart while I was watching that movie. And I gotta tell you, the fact that he's back and angry and gruff and out for blood warms my cockles like you wouldn't believe. This is the most unpleasant looking Jeremy Renner we've seen since The Town. His family's dead. The universe is ending. You know, he wants some Thanos blood. He wants a piece of Thanos. I love it. Renner! Made that trailer so worth it for me. That's really my only takeaway. I don't give a shit about the rest of it. Like, whatever, man. However you solve this thing, Captain Marvel's going to come in the picture. Cool. However you want to play it, dude. It's cool with me. Just play the same songs that you always do, right? Like, just add a couple cool guitar riffs every now and again. And it's fine with me. I mean, that's what the Marvel movies are at this point. It's the same song, just a different little taste. And we all love cover bands, don't we? Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with a little sameness, a little familiarity. Pretty good trailer. Second piece of news. More franchise stuff. More stuff from the world of Disney, might I add. There's some casting news out there for this show called The Mandalorian. I don't know if you've heard of this. This is the Jon Favreau Star Wars series debuting on the Disney Plus streaming service next year. And I'm not exactly sure what it's about. Evidently, it takes place in between episodes 6 and 7. It's following some bounty hunters or shit, some shit. Like, I don't know. Apparently, this is where Boba Fett is from. So, in case you didn't get enough Boba Fett in the last couple of movies, you're in luck. We're going to find out more about the Boba Fett story. Eye roll. But this Mandalorian show, it's coming out. And we already knew that Pedro Pascal from Game of Thrones and Nick Nolte from everything that you love. The legendary actor Nick Nolte is also in this show. And I thought, okay, you have my interest. Consider me intrigued. Well, Disney decided to drop a massive Nico bomb this morning. Like, they really knew how to get me going. They knew how to tickle all of my ivories, so to speak. They hit me in all the right places. Disney drops this story about the latest additions to the Mandalorian cast. And I got to be honest with you, I came a little bit in my pants. Get this, y'all. Listen to this slate of actors joining the Mandalorian TV show. First and foremost, Giancarlo Esposito, Gus Fring himself from Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. He's in this show, presumably as a villain. I certainly hope he's a villain. But it gets better. Number two, Carl fucking Weathers. Apollo Creed. Dylan, you son of a bitch. Carl Weathers? He's still alive? He's still up and kicking? I thought he died like 10 years ago. He still acts? Carl Weathers is like still a thing? And if so, why is he not shown up in one of the latest Creed movies as the ghost of Apollo? No cameo for Carl Weathers? Are you serious? Y'all, Carl Weathers is going to be like a Jedi? Oh my God. Please tell me Carl Weathers can use the Force. Please tell me that he's at least going to wield a lightsaber at some point. Carl Weathers. This is look, Carl Weathers, I do believe, and although he is iconic, like he has been in two iconic films, Rocky and The Predator, two iconic 70s, 80s action films, and in one case, a sports film. Big blockbusters, was a big movie star at the time, and is terrific in both of those movies. But Carl Weathers is sort of the lost action star in many ways. He was sort of left behind by Schwarzenegger and Stallone, and I'm not exactly sure why that is. But Carl Weathers is phenomenal in those movies. He is built like a Greek god. He has the body of an action star. Has the charisma of an action star. Holds his own while on screen with both Stallone and Schwarzenegger in those two films. Like, Carl Weathers should have been making Steven Seagal movies. Like, he should just have remained a thing for the last 30 years. He should be in The Expendables. Is he in The Expendables? I'm not sure. Now that you mention it, I'm sure he was in The Expendables. No, he wasn't. He's been in the Chicago shows. Oh, my God. Wait a minute. Hold up. Time out. Hold up. Flag on the play. Are you fucking telling me Carl Weathers has been spending the last 3 years in the NBC Chicago universe? What the hell? Judge Mark Jeffries on Chicago Justice? What the fuck is happening? Wait a minute, that, first of all, what the hell is Chicago Justice? I didn't even know this was a thing. I only thought there were three Chicago shows. Turns out there's a fourth. He has appeared in Chicago Fire, Chicago PD, and Chicago Justice. Oh, and it looks like Chicago Justice was canceled last year. Oh, wow. I guess they can't all be winners. Yeah, has done some TV work, was in Psych, ER. Yeah, where's Carl Weathers been, man? I'm so excited for this. I am excited for the Weathers Renaissance. So he's in The Mandalorian. And then finally, and this name really threw me for a loop. This is when I fully reached orgasm this afternoon. Werner Herzog in The Mandalorian. Werner fucking Herzog. You must never listen to this. You must destroy this tape. No one must hear this. It will be the white elephant in your room your entire life. Never listen to this. I'm quoting Werner Herzog from his famous documentary, Grizzly Man, in which he documents a man who was eaten alive by a bear. You know Werner, please. But that's one of my favorite scenes in all of film, is when Werner is sitting there listening to the recording of the man being mauled by the bear and telling his girlfriend at the time, or whoever he is, like a friend, don't ever listen to this tape. You must destroy this tape. And we, as the audience, doesn't even get to listen to the tape. We just have to take Werner's word for it. Quit holding out on us, Werner. Werner Herzog, legendary director. Legendary director. Director of Fitzcarraldo from the 80s. Many documentaries like Grizzly Man. Recently, he made a film about the internet. What the hell was that thing called? Like Lo and Behold, something like that. Oh, that's right. Lo and Behold, Reveries of the Connected World. German director, was a villain, as a matter of fact, in the Jack Reacher movies, which I can't stand, or at least he was a villain in the first one. Look, man, the fact that Werner has now moved on after being a notoriously difficult German auteur in the 80s, to a similarly difficult but nonetheless visionary documentarian in the 90s and 2000s, to now he is taking his rightful place on his throne. He is now an actor in the Star Wars universe, hopefully playing a member of the Sith or the New Order or whatever they call themselves. I want Werner to be the new emperor. Like, whatever was going on with the Andy Serkis character in episode 7, I hope that Werner assumes that mantle in the following movie. This is just fantastic. What the hell is going on with The Mandalorian? Giancarlo Esposito, Carl Weathers, Werner Herzog, Pedro Pascal, Nick Nolte. Just amazing. And by the way, a phenomenal slate of directors lined up to direct episodes of that show. This is really going to be a cinematic thing. This is a big deal. This is a big investment on the part of Disney. This is going to be what they launch their streaming service with. They're going to see if they can make compelling television that could perhaps you know, be more popular than their films. It's a big play. They're trying to be the next Netflix. I will say this. I would not bet against The Mandalorian at this point. The cast is just too phenomenal. I'm not going to be able to resist. All right, that's enough there. Let's talk about the award, shall we? We'll take one break first. But when we come back, I will break down the Golden Globe, Grammy, and Screen Actors Guild Award nominations in explicit detail and give you my latest hot takes for this year's Oscar race. Stick around. It's Cultured. We'll be right back. So before we get started, I want to give a bit of a primer for award season. I'd like to explain to you what you're about to see unfold over the next 3 months and further elaborate on the significance of each of these award shows, because not all award shows are created equal. Some are more highly rated than others. Some are more prestigious than others. Some are better indicators of the Oscars than others. It's a crazy circus that you're about to see unfold over the next 3 months, and it's all leading up to the big award show at the end of February, the Academy Awards, hosted by God knows who. Whatever comedian didn't tweet anything homophobic over the last 10 years. They will be hosting the Academy Awards this February. And so as we watch these various award shows, some of which you've heard of, some of which you've probably never heard of, we are viewing it through the lens of what does this mean for the Oscars? It's sort of like an election. And in many ways, like as I discuss the circus that is Oscar season, I'm going to talk about it like it's an election. I'm going to talk about the various campaigns run by studios on behalf of their films. And I'm going to use words like messaging, branding, momentum, narrative, strategy. Words normally associated with politics, because that's what Oscar season is. It's a political battle. And it's run like most general elections. These early award shows are primaries. They are often indicators for how the general is going to go, but you have to win a number of primaries if you want to win the big prize at the Oscars. You look to carry momentum from these smaller award shows into the big award show in February. And so I'll be asking questions like, did this movie peak too early? Are voters receptive to it or generally against it? Was it released at the right time of year? Is it on message? Is this the type of movie that voters tend to fawn over? Is the stock up? Is the stock down? Like, I'm going to talk about this thing and prognosticate this thing as though I was discussing a general election. And thank Christ. And this is the great thing about Hollywood, that the fate of the free world does not rest on this vote. You know, we can just, and this is part of the reason why I love award shows. They're glitzy and they're glamorous and they're dramatic. Sometimes they're a bit pretentious and snobby. Actually, they're always pretentious and snobby, but they're harmless. They're meaningless. It's all made up. They're just shiny trophies that rich people fight over. And it's fun to watch it. And it's fun to follow it as though it's a sporting event. So that's why I love the Oscars, and that's why I love these award shows. And let's get into it, shall we? Let's talk about it. The Golden Globes. Here's the deal with the Golden Globes. They fucking don't matter at all. It's somehow, and I don't understand why this is, the Golden Globes are somehow one of the three award shows that Americans watch at the beginning of the year. The Golden Globes are like generally the second week of January. And then the Grammys are towards the end of January. And then the Oscars at the end of February. And that's it. And then no one else gives a shit about the rest of them. They have carved out a very impressive niche for themselves. And by them, I mean the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, who runs the Golden Globes. This is a body of foreign critics that enjoy celebrating American film, but generally don't have their pulse, their finger on the pulse of American film as much as they'd like to believe. Like, that's just the nature of the Hollywood Foreign Press. And it's a fun award show, and it's often the most drunk Celebrities are having a great time in the audience. The hosts are a little loose. It's the show that Ricky Gervais hosted for 3 years in a row. It's the show that Tina Fey and Amy Poehler hosted for a number of years in a row. It's funnier. It's edgier. It's in a smaller venue. It's more of a party. But everybody sort of understands, particularly in the industry, that the Hollywood Foreign Press is a corrupt body. The Golden Globes are about as legitimate as an Egyptian election. You know what I mean? Like, voters are often, like, lobbied at expensive luncheons. Stars go up to each of them at these dinners, and they kiss ass, and they beg for their votes, they beg for their support. And the Hollywood Foreign Press tends to give the trophies to either the most famous person in the room or the person that they enjoy talking to the most during lunch. Like, that's how this thing works. The Hollywood Foreign Press is not any good indication for the Oscars whatsoever. It might seem that way. Like, because it's the first show of the year, we tend to give it a little more weight than it deserves. But if you really step back and compare and contrast the Oscars over the last 10 years and the Golden Globes over the last 10 years, it's not a great indicator. It's a pretty good indicator. It's not a great indicator. You should watch this thing for the shit show that it is. You should watch it as a circus, not as a celebration of cinematic excellence. That being said, though, there were some interesting surprises. And the nominees in each of these motion picture categories will most likely mirror the best picture nominees at the Oscars. Like, you're not going to see Crazy Rich Asians nominated for Best Picture. You're not going to see probably Mary Poppins or Bohemian Rhapsody nominated for Best Picture, but you're definitely going to see Black Panther. You're definitely going to see Black Klansman, A Star is Born, The Favorite. These are names you're going to have to get used to. The big takeaway is the staggering number of nominations for Vice, the Dick Cheney movie directed by Adam McKay and starring Christian Bale. Somehow Vice was on nobody's radar for the Oscar hunt. And now all of a sudden, it gets the most nominations at the Golden Globes, picks up some nominations for both Christian Bale and Sam Rockwell, who plays George W. Bush in the movie, picks up a Best Picture nomination, picks up a Best Director nomination and a Best Screenplay nomination. This is significant. Who knows if it will have any chance at the Oscars, but this is a movie that no one has seen yet. It's hard to gauge exactly the support for this movie, how critics will respond to it. But the Hollywood Foreign Press, again, just by sheer perception, has springboarded Vice into the Oscar race. And that is significant. Other than that, not a ton of surprises. What we do know for sure now, if we cross-reference this list with some of the other nominations that came out this week, like the Critics' Choice Awards and the Screen Actors Guild Awards, is that we have the 8 or 9 movies that will get nominated for Best Picture. We know who the nominees are already. I will say it declaratively now on this podcast. Put my money on each of these films. These are your nominees for Best Picture once they're announced in January ahead of the Oscars. Black Panther, Black Klansman, The Favorite, Green Book, If Beale Street Could Talk, A Star is Born, Roma, and Vice. End of list. That's it. Those are your contenders. No one else is sneaking in. And if someone does, it would be a massive surprise. Perhaps Mary Poppins could get in at the 11th hour. Momentum for that film might build over the next few weeks. Maybe you get a nomination for something like Eighth Grade, although I highly doubt it. It's a small movie, not a Best Picture caliber movie, generally speaking. The rest of these films have a significant number of nominations across a variety of shows. This is the race. And I got to be honest with you, looking back, crossing my arms, really pondering this list, here's what I realized. It's been a shitty-ass year for movies. My Lord, not a good year. Not a good slate of films. I guess we'll talk about that as the year comes to an end. But I am not impressed with this slate so far. The TV nominations were a joke, as always, in the Golden Globes. It's always sort of been the redheaded stepchild to the Emmys. No one has ever taken the Golden Globes television awards seriously. And it's because there's been so much turnover every year. The list of nominees changes on a whim, it seems like. You know, like Game of Thrones, I think, won like Best Drama once. Mad Men won it once. Breaking Bad won it once. And then you never see those shows again. Because the Golden Globes aren't really interested in nominating the year's best television programs. Because, again, they don't have their finger on the pulse of America. So they're not interested in awarding the shows that America is interested in. They're interested in crowning new stars. They are interested in getting the momentum going for young, hot, fresh television shows that have perhaps not even taken it to that next level yet. You know, they like getting in on the ground floor. They like investing early so they can say, hey, look, we called Killing Eve. We called Barry. We called Homecoming. We called Pose. These are among the shows nominated for Best Drama this year and Best Comedy this year. Most of these shows had their first seasons in 2018. And I'll list them. In Best Drama, The Bodyguard, or just Bodyguard, first season show, miniseries. Homecoming, first season show. Killing Eve in its first season. Pose in its first season. The Americans is the only show that was not in its first season this past year. In comedy, Barry, new show. The Good Place, a show that's been on for a number of years, but not really awarded by the Emmys in any significant way. Kidding, first year show. The Kominsky Method. Kominsky? Dude, I don't understand what the hell is going on with the Kominsky Method. Why is this show so popular? Why is this thing popping up at like the SAGs and stuff? Award voters love the Kominsky Method. Is it just because Michael Douglas is on TV? That's got to be why. It's just because, like, Michael Douglas and Alan Arkin are doing a Chuck Lorre Netflix show. Like, the I don't get what the momentum is. And again, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel comes back in season two. But that's the thing about the Golden Globes. They like getting in on the ground floor. So although these shows might have some success at the Emmys, this is mostly a list of dramas and comedies that you will not see anywhere else ever again. Other than that, though, it's fun. It's a good time. The Golden Globes are always a good time. I enjoy them as much as the next person. And I like watching drunk celebrities, and I like watching comics that are not afraid to take shots at comedians. I don't know if we're going to get that this year. The hosts this year are Sandra Oh and Andy Samberg, who might play it a little safe. That's just my gut. That is what's still to come. In terms of the acting categories, and again, this is also sort of dipping my toe into the Screen Actors Guild nominations. The SAG Awards, although they are a fairly popular award show and people tend to watch them wherever they are televised, they only recognize excellence in acting. So they're limited as far as being an indicator for the Oscars. By the way, for those of you that don't understand how this works, Hollywood, like most industries, is made up of a number of unions. So there's the Producers Guild, there's the Directors Guild, there's the Editors Guild, there's the Screen Actors Guild. And whatever job you have in Hollywood, you most likely belong to a union. Each of these unions have their own award shows. And if you are a member of that union, you are eligible to vote in that show. So the Screen Actors Guild is comprised of screen actors and screen actors only. And they choose to award their peers that are responsible for the same work that they are. So there's no Best Picture in the Screen Actors Guild Awards. There's Best Ensemble Cast, there's Best Lead Actor, there's Best Lead Actress, Supporting Actor, Supporting Actress. But again, it's only limited in scope to those particular races. Why it tends to be a good indicator of the Oscars is because of all of these careers actors make up the highest portion of Academy voters. So it stands to reason that if someone wins a Screen Actors Guild Award, they are positioned very well for the Academy Awards. There's a lot of overlap in voter body. The Producers Guild Awards are the same way. That's why you should, generally speaking, look to the winner of the Producers Guild Award for Best Picture if you want to predict who's going to win the Oscar for Best Picture. So if you look at the Screen Actors Guild Awards, more likely than not, you're going to see the nominees for Best Actor and Best Actress at the Oscars. And those names are Olivia Colman in The Favorite, Lady Gaga in A Star Is Born, Melissa McCarthy in Can You Ever Forgive Me, Emily Blunt in Mary Poppins Returns, and Glenn Close in The Wife. You might see Nicole Kidman sneak in there ahead of Emily Blunt. You might see Elsie Fisher from Eighth Grade, maybe. You might see Rosamund Pike from A Private War, but that's your list more likely than not. And in the Best Actor category, Christian Bale in Vice, Bradley Cooper in A Star Is Born, Rami Malek in Bohemian Rhapsody, Viggo Mortensen in Green Book, John David Washington in Black Klansman. Those are your five nominees. We don't even have to debate. We can end the conversation right there. Those are your five nominees for Best Actor. There is no dispute. Those are the five vying for that prestigious trophy. No one else is going to sneak in there. Mark my words. And finally, let's talk Grammys, shall we? Really quick, and then we'll get out of here. Similar to my reaction to the Golden Globes, what I realized when looking at the Grammy nominees for 2018 is that it's been a shitty-ass year for music. And again, like, look... The Grammys are not in any way, shape, or form indicative of the best music we got in 2018. No way. As much of a joke as the Golden Globes are, as much of a joke as even the Oscars are, the Grammys are in another league. It's a concert. It's a concert that young people like to watch on television. A bunch of famous people show up at Madison Square Garden. They sing their tunes. Sometimes they duet with one another, and the awards are, for the most part, secondary. Like, literally every recording artist under the sun has at least one Grammy under their belt. If a famous recording artist does not have a Grammy under their belt, that's when you know something's up. Because everybody's got one. There are more Grammys to go around than fucking Skittles in a candy jar. Everybody's getting them. So, take this list with a grain of salt. Understand that music is the most diverse art form we have. It is the most subjective. It is the most susceptible to opinion. It is impossible to agree on musical tastes, to agree on sort of a shared definition of excellence, particularly between genres. Like, perhaps it's easy to give out the best rap album or the best country album or the best pop album awards at the Grammys. But once you put all those genres together under the same roof, like, just take your pick. It's all about taste. It's all about what music you find least offensive, most accessible. And that's why you often see winners like Bruno Mars and Taylor Swift. And you don't see winners like Kendrick and Kanye. Like, Grammy voters tend to be a little bit on the older side. They tend to listen to safe pop music. They have a hard time agreeing on one definition of excellence. And so, therefore, the most popular, the most accessible music is the music that does best at these things. So, let me just tell you this right now. If you look at this Record of the Year category, I Like It by Cardi B. I don't think so. The Joke by Grandy Charlie? I don't know who that is. I don't think so either. This Is America by Childish Gambino? No way. God's Plan by Drake? No way. Shallow by Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper? Now, this is where it gets interesting. Because Shallow is also going to win Song of the Year at the Oscars. It's going to have a a very long shelf life because of award season. You're most likely going to see Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper perform this thing together at the Oscars. So the momentum might be in Shallow's favor. Like, very rarely do the Grammys and Oscars overlap in terms of their campaigns. But that's the type of pop power ballad that the Grammys tend to respect and have a lot of affection for. So look out for Shallow. All the Stars by Kendrick Lamar? No, probably not. Rockstar by Post Malone? No. The Middle by Zedd? Again, I don't know what that is. It's a pop song, though, right? Oh, yeah, I know what the... Oh, yeah. In the middle, na-na-na-na, in the middle. I'm just caught in the middle. Right? This song is right in the middle. Not very good or bad, just the middle. That could win Record of the Year, too. Album of the Year? Cardi B? Nah. Brandi Carlile, still don't know who that is. Drake, no way. Her, H-E-R, in an acronym form. Who the fuck is that? Post Malone, no. Janelle Monáe, probably not. Kacey Musgraves, country album. Golden Hour, did very well this year. People are high on that record. It's showing up on a lot of top 10 lists. Don't sell that one short. And Black Panther, the album, probably not. I don't know if you noticed this. The Grammys don't really like black people all that much. I'm sorry. I shouldn't accuse a voting body of being racist. But if I was going to accuse any voting body of being racist, it might be the voting body that voted for Taylor Swift instead of Kendrick Lamar when To Pimp a Butterfly was nominated. I mean, I'm just saying. Maybe it's not exactly evidence of the rule, but... it's at least hinting at the rule, isn't it? Song of the Year is same old deal. Yeah, Cardi B ain't winning shit at this award show. No shot. Look for the pop songs to do very well. I am looking forward to it, though. I always enjoy the Grammys, again, because it's spectacle. It's a concert. Makes you feel like you're there. Makes you feel like you hang out with famous people. You enjoy watching Ed Sheeran and Taylor Swift get all lovey-dovey in the front row. And often Beyonce shows up and she performs, and then we talk about Beyonce's performance for like 10 days. It's a good time. Can't hate on the Grammys. But again, in terms of these actual awards, that's not the headline. The Grammys are an excuse to get a bunch of people together and performing their favorite songs. It's not about awarding excellence. There you go. Oh, by the way, yeah, this was the first year they expanded this to 8 nominees, right? Yeah, this was like a big thing because last year the Academy of Music or whatever the hell the voting body is that dictates these awards got in some trouble because he's like, yo, ladies, you weren't nominated for Album of the Year. No female nominees for Album of the Year. How about you step up your games if you want to get more of those nominations? And then all of the Me Too people were like, yo, slow your roll, man. It's the patriarchy keeping us down. So the Academy, in order to avoid controversy, says, all right, let's expand this to 8 nominees in the 3 major categories, and hopefully more women will find their way in. Well, they did that, and a lot of women found their way in. But I got to be honest with you, these awards seem a little fat. It seems like you could trim off a few nominees. Like, once I see Post Malone and Cardi B on this list, that's when I'm about to be out. I'm about to be out on the Grammys. Like, we expanded it from 5 to 8 for this. It's not like we're letting Bob Dylan in. It's not like, oh, Bob Dylan doesn't have enough Grammys. Let's widen the strike zone a bit. Let's figure out a way to get Prince into the fold. No. We expanded from 5 to 8 in order to make room for Cardi B and Post Malone. Pass, dog, pass. That's Cultured. Man, I love you so very, very much. Thanks for sticking with me if you did till the end of the program. Tweet me at FunnyNicoTweets on Twitter if you'd like to get more of my pop culture takes. Email me, Nico@2centsradio.com. That works as well, I think. Maybe it's NicoDiGregorio7@gmail.com. Yeah, that might be better. NicoDiGregorio7@gmail.com. Link is in the description of this podcast if you'd like to contact me. TooManyThoughtsMedia.com or TMT.media. We're having a great month of December so far, and so much more fun stuff around the corner. I got to get working on all that shit, as a matter of fact. So I'm going to end this podcast now and try working on some content to populate my site, to bring you the entertainment, news, and analysis that you can use and abuse. I live to serve y'all, so I'm going to go do that. But until next time, I love each and every one of you so very, very much. And please come back next week so you and I can once again get cultured. See you then.